Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear America's favorite insurance investigator, yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But right now, a Norman MacDonald-directed broadcast of Suspense. This from October 14th, 1954, on CBS. William Conrad, Paula Winslow, John Daner, and Tony Barrett star in the story Lost.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, the simple tale of a woman who finds herself accused of murder and yet has no remembrance of either the act itself or the person she is said to have killed. So now, with Paula Winslow as Alice, here is tonight's suspense play, Lost.
It happened in New York. I was window shopping on Fifth Avenue. It was noon. The sun was warm, but a chill made me shiver. I started walking again. I reached 59th Street, Central Park. No more stores, no more windows. I wanted to walk in the park, but I didn't. I couldn't decide. Should I? Shouldn't I? Yes, no, do, don't. I knew I had to go someplace. I knew I had to meet somebody, but it all happened so fast, like somebody closing a door. Suddenly, I couldn't remember who I had to meet, or where, or when. I started to walk, fast as I could. I was almost running, up one block, down the next, back to Central Park. I had to keep moving. I had to run into something or somebody that would remind me. I had to. Then I saw a policeman in the middle of the street. He was directing traffic. I ran toward him.
Lady! You tired of living?
Oh, help me. Please help me.
What's the matter?
I'm lost.
Well, this is 59th Street and 7th Avenue. Downtown is that way. Where you want to go?
Well, I don't know.
Come on, no left turn here. Keep going. What was that again, lady?
Well, all these cars, these buildings, those people. This looks like New York.
Yeah, this is New York.
Well, how did I get here?
Where are you from?
I don't know.
Huh?
Well,
all right, now, lady, now don't cry.
I don't even know my name. He asked me a few more questions. Then he took me to the precinct station. He left me there with a detective named Mark Neal.
Now, let's go over what we got so far, huh?
All right.
The name Alice is on the inside of your wedding ring. It's on the lining of your coat. It's on your dress and burned into the flap of your purse.
Alice.
It's still not familiar, huh?
No. Please, may I get up?
Yeah, sure. Oh, where are you going?
Well, I just want to walk. Back and forth in here's all right, as long as I can keep moving. Lieutenant, what's going to happen to me?
Yeah, we'll try to find out who you are, if you can just sit on for a few minutes.
Oh, well, I'll try.
The patrolman said you didn't seem scared by the traffic.
Well, what does that mean?
That you probably came from a big city.
Here? New York?
No, you'd have some kind of a key in your purse. My guess is that you're at some hotel. You left the key at the desk.
Oh, help me. Please.
Your clothes are clean. They're not wrinkled. Means you didn't sleep in them last night, so you haven't been missing very long.
But who am I? Who do I belong to? Oh, I'm sorry. I've got to walk.
Okay. Let's go get your picture taken.
Where?
It's just down the hall.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'll send your picture to all the papers and the TV stations.
But what if... Suppose nobody recognizes me.
Well, then it'll be up to the doctors.
Doctors?
At City Hospital. That's your next stop.
Oh, will you stay there with me?
At the hospital?
Yes. Oh, you've got to. You're the only friend I've got.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Oh, please. Please don't leave me. Don't leave me alone.
Alone.
Alone in a city of 8 million people. I knew three of them. A policeman near Central Park, a detective, and the nurse who brought me here to this ward. This hospital ward.
Hello.
Oh, do I know you?
I'm Dr. Corday.
Oh, then you can help me. Please, I want to get out of here. I don't want to stay here. I can't. They made a mistake.
Who did?
Well, the hospital. I heard the nurse. I know what this is, the psycho ward for crazy people. Look, I'm not crazy. I'm not. I just can't remember who I am.
Go ahead. It'll do you good.
You think I'll start remembering?
Maybe not, but somebody will recognize you. You're a celebrity. Your picture's in all the papers, and it's been on every TV station in the city.
And nobody's called?
Not yet.
Doctor, how long will this last? When will I start to remember?
Maybe a day, a week, a month. Right now, you need some rest.
Oh, I can't sleep now.
Did you take that pill the nurse brought?
Yes.
You sleep. And we'll talk some more after you wake up. Have a good sleep.
Well, I must have had. It's dark outside.
What's the matter?
Well, they moved me. They moved me while I was sleeping.
It's all right. You're on another floor of the hospital.
But those bars on the windows. Why did you move me? Why are those bars on the windows? Well, tell me, please, tell me.
I want you to concentrate on the game now. It's called word association. I'll say a word. You answer with the first word you think of. Black.
White.
Texas.
Big.
Blood.
Red.
Gun.
Kill.
Bullet.
Dead.
Murder.
Well, why do you pick those words? Blood and bullet.
Please
murder.
Answer. Murder.
This is the prison ward, isn't it?
It's just another floor of the hospital.
It's the prison ward, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I've been arrested. I've done something. But those words, blood and gun, I've killed somebody.
You remember?
Oh, then it's true. It's true.
Alice, I want you to look at some pictures.
Well, who did I kill? Who was it? Tell me.
See if you recognize the people in these pictures. Try this one first.
Oh, doctor, help me. Help me.
Now, look at that picture. You know him?
Well, should I?
Do you?
Well, I don't know. Is he the one, the man I killed? Is he? That's why you're showing me the picture, isn't it? He's dead. Dead. And I killed him.
No, Alice.
She fainted.
That's all right, Mr. Parker.
Nurse.
Will this bring back her memory?
Maybe not completely, but she may at least remember you're her husband. This next one is my office, Mr. Parker.
All right.
Leave the door open so we can hear the nurse. Pull up a chair.
Yeah.
I didn't get much chance to talk to you before, Mr. Parker. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Fire away, Doc.
I think you said you and your wife came here from San Francisco?
Yeah, about a month and a half ago.
What brought you here?
I'm a songwriter. I can write better stuff left-handed than the junk you hear today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying there are no good writers left, but... Oh, look. Irving Berlin, an old man. Rodgers and Hammerstein, they're busy counting their money. Cole Porter, a has-been. Tin Pan Alley is begging for a great young songwriter. And I'm their boy.
Have you written any songs?
Hundreds of them. And all great.
Ooh, what are they? Maybe I remember some of them.
Well, none of them has been published yet, but that's politics. That's why we come to New York, to make the connection.
You look a good deal younger than your wife.
I'm 24. She's 36. But don't crack it, I told you. I don't want to hurt her feelings.
How did you happen to marry someone that much older?
Want me to level with you?
Well, help me treat your wife.
Well, Alice is no Marilyn Monroe. Want me to spell it out anymore?
I take it she's rather wealthy.
We ain't living at the Hotel Bentley on my royalty checks.
How's the marriage going?
Sometimes okay.
And other times?
You could have sold ringside seats.
What do you fight about?
Always the same thing. Alice is a nice girl. And I like to live the way that she can afford, but let's face it, Doc, I'm 24.
I don't think I understand.
Alice, she gets crazy jealous if I say hello to another girl.
Is that why she shot Joyce Carlyle?
I guess so. All I was trying to do was sell Carlyle some of my numbers. If she gives your song a ride, you got a real chance.
And for your wife's sake, I hope Miss Carlyle pulls through.
Huh?
It'll have a terrible effect on Alice if Miss Carlyle dies.
She's still alive?
She had another transfusion about half an hour ago.
Oh, where is she?
Downstairs, second floor.
Look, I'd better get down and see how she is.
No, she's still unconscious. I've been getting word from the detectives.
Detectives?
They're waiting around in case she regains consciousness.
Oh, Dr. Corday.
Yes, nurse.
Mrs. Parker is asking for you.
Oh, thank you. Come on along, Mr. Parker.
Yeah.
Sure.
Here. Won't you remember me?
You'll know when you walk in that door.
Alice.
You called me Alice.
Honey, I'm Vance.
Vance?
Your husband, baby. We came here from San Francisco, don't you remember? Oh, come on, honey. Let me hold you.
Oh, don't. Please. Don't.
Alice, it's me. It's Vance.
Now, please, let me go.
Hello, Doctor. Now, Mrs. Parker.
Lieutenant.
Oh, hello, Mr. Neal.
Lieutenant Neal, Mr. Parker.
Are you one of the detectives from downstairs?
Yes. And, I've got some bad news.
Look, how is Miss Carlyle?
Dead. They were holding your wife for murder.
Asked me more questions. I couldn't answer any of them. Dead or alive, I didn't remember Joyce Carlyle. I didn't even remember myself. Alice Parker, San Francisco. Alice Parker, San...
Honey, you quitting?
Oh, it's no good, Vance.
That's the first time you call me by my right name.
Oh, why can't I remember? Why can't I remember?
Oh, honey, you heard the head shrinker. Relax, forget it.
But how can I?
What can they do to you? They found your handkerchief in Joyce Carlyle's apartment. That's all they got. They don't even have the gun you used, the witnesses.
Well, I don't care about that.
Besides, honey, they can't hang you for a murder you can't even remember.
Vance, can't you understand?
What? Why don't I have to? What?
Whether they convict me isn't important.
It's not.
Look, even if they let me walk out now, I've got to live every day knowing I killed somebody. Oh, don't you see? Don't you understand at all?
Yeah, sure, honey, sure. Look, I'll get a lawyer tomorrow and you'll be out of here real quick.
Just a minute.
Good morning, Mr. Parker.
Oh, hi, Lieutenant. What are you doing here?
I'd like to look around your suite, if I can.
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Come on in the bedroom while I grab a tie, huh?
Mm-hmm. Just these two rooms in the place?
Yeah, that's it. If you tell me what you're looking for, maybe I can steer you.
Is this your wife's dresser?
Uh-huh. You were prowling for anything in particular?
No. Just want to see if there's any sign your wife planned this. It makes a difference if it was premeditated. You ever see your wife with a gun?
Oh, skeet rifle?
No, a snub-nosed 22 caliber pistol, pearl handle.
You told me you didn't have any murder weapon.
We found it this morning.
Where?
Near the 59th Street entrance to the park.
Close to where Alice talked to that cop?
Yeah, two blocks.
Any fingerprints on the gun?
No, but it's the right gun. Anything on the night table there?
Phone books. Come on, you ready for the other room?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. $27.50 a day for these two rooms. Make it a softer touch in Crosby's agent.
Do you have the key to this desk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right here. It's a little one.
Thank you.
How about that? $27.50 a copy. You think they throw in anything on a cuff? Nah. You want to watch TV? You drop two bits in that slot. Cost me a buck yesterday to watch a disc jockey. And, speaking of dough, I know this ain't any time to ask, but...
Here are your keys.
Look, you think they'll tie up Alice's loot while she's getting the marbles counted, huh?
I don't know.
It'll ground me real good if they do. You know, today was payday, and if she ain't around, I'll sign my check.
I'll remind her when I get to the hospital.
Oh, thanks a lot. And, you tell her I'll be over later with the lawyer, huh?
You better check first.
What?
She may be out. I'm taking her to Joyce Carlisle's apartment.
Oh, come on. What do you guys want?
They got a murder to solve.
But you got it, Sal. So even if Alice did kill this canary, she was off a rocker. There's nothing you can do to her. Why are you taking her to Joyce's place? Ain't she had a bad enough time?
You're welcome to come along.
Morning, Alice.
Oh, hello, Doctor.
Feel stronger today?
Well, I think so.
How much is 2 and 2?
What?
How much is 2 and 2?
4.
How do you know?
Well, I learned it.
When?
When I was a little girl. I had a special blue dress, and...
Go on.
And they used to tease me and call me Alice Blue Gown. Doctor, it's coming back. I'm beginning to remember. I live in San Francisco. My name is Alice Lee Parker.
Where are you?
In New York, with my husband. His name is Vance.
How did you come here?
On a train. We got here last week.
Last week?
On Friday. It's our second honeymoon. Vance took me out Saturday night to the Golden Angel. We danced together, every dance. He never looked at another girl.
The Golden Angel?
The nightclub. Oh, it was wonderful.
You remember a girl who sang at the club?
Yes. Yes, a pretty girl. We liked her. Her name was...
Joyce?
Yes. Joyce. Joyce Carlisle. Oh, but no. No, that's the name of the girl I...
You remember?
No, I remember her name from last night.
Last night?
When the detective came in, he said she died.
You remember shooting her?
Oh, no. No, I... Oh, I thought I was all better. Oh, Vance. Oh, darling. Oh, darling.
Easy, honey.
She's almost completely recovered.
Doctor.
Oh, good morning, Lieutenant. I didn't see you.
Doctor, can you step out into the corridor for a minute?
Sure. Partners. What is it?
Does she remember the shooting?
Not yet. There's still a gap, a kind of twilight zone of about a month.
Is there any danger in her visiting Joyce Carlisle's apartment?
On the contrary, it might snap her out of it entirely.
Good. I'll take her over there right now.
Pretty classy layout she had here, huh?
Mrs. Parker, does the place look familiar?
No, it doesn't.
Now, the next room is the den here. This is where it happened.
Do you remember it now, honey?
No.
Miss Carlisle was sitting on that couch when she was shot. Oh, excuse me, that might be for me. Hello.
Oh,
yes.
But yes. Why?
Why what?
Well, why did I... Why should I want to kill her?
Oh, you thought that she was cutting your time.
With you?
Oh, Natch, I kept telling you that, honey, but you wouldn't listen.
All right, thanks.
How could I do it?
Well, finally adds up. You know, I first got suspicious when the murder gun showed up without fingerprints.
Why?
Because you weren't wearing gloves when you lost your memory and you had none in your purse. It looked like the gun was planted for us to find. Planted where it would look bad for you, Mrs. Parker. That phone call was from your hotel.
Well, what have they got to do with this?
Well, there's a tape in that coin box on your TV set. It records the time the coin drops in and the channel being watched.
Come on, let's get with it.
You were watching Channel 2 yesterday at 3:15 when your wife's picture was telecast.
Anything wrong with it?
It was a real good setup. Your wife in the hospital with amnesia, so she can't remember whether she did it or not. You plant her handkerchief here where the police will find it.
Vance.
Your telephone charge slip shows that you called her here at 3:45 yesterday. Had to be you because your wife was in the hospital at that time.
Oh, now, look. Joyce, Carla, I was going to sing some of my songs. Why would I knock her off?
We found out about that, too, from her piano player. You told Joyce Carlisle you were going to divorce your wife and marry her. And she was demanding action. So come on, son. You can think up another story on the way to headquarters.
Suspense, in which Paula Winslow starred as Alice. Next week, the ironic story of an actor who played his first part perhaps too well, leaving himself unable to better his performance. We call it Rave Notice. That's next week on Suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from October 14th, 1954 on CBS. The program was directed by, even then, radio legend Norman MacDonald, who at the same time was producing his greatest radio triumph, Gunsmoke, and even episodes of the CBS series Romance, where basically every 3 days he was behind one of those programs, cueing the actors and music, and also sound effects. MacDonald having the reputation of not only holding his Foley artists or sound effects men in high esteem, but was the first radio director to give credit to sound effects operators on the air. It's an hour of mystery. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for yours truly, Johnny Deller, an early broadcast of the series featuring John Lund in the lead from October 15th, 1949 on CBS.
Well, anyway, I learned the answer to the question, what does a doctor do when a doctor needs a doctor?
This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At Insurance Investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius.
Expense accounts submitted by special investigator, Johnny Dollar, to American Volunteer Liability Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Homer Shalley, General Manager. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my investigation of one of your policyholders, Dr. Otto Schmedlick. Or, an apple a day sent the doctor away. Or, it couldn't have happened to a bigger worm. Expense accounts, item one. 80 cents cab fare to your office in answer to your call. Tip to driver, $1.
Oh, morning, Mr. Dollar.
Hiya.
Go right in, Mr. Charlie's expecting you.
Thanks, sir.
Good morning, Dollar.
Good morning.
Sit down.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we had that unfortunate altercation over the last expense account you submitted to this office.
Oh, that's all right.
Because it was ridiculous. You're going around tipping cab drivers a dollar after a 50-cent trip.
Well, you know me, Homer. Just a silly, headstrong, impetuous boy.
It was somebody else's money, yes. We've been through all that. What I want to talk to you now is posse. Oh, here it is. Dr. Otto Schmedlick, Los Angeles, California.
California? Doesn't anything ever happen in Hartford? I've been using an airplane seatbelt so much lately, I'm about ready to throw away my suspenders.
Dr. Otto Schmedlick. I suppose you're familiar with the existence of that type of insurance policy which protects doctors against charges of malpractice.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Well, we had the rare misfortune of issuing such a policy to this quack Schmedlick.
Well, what do you want me to do? Go out and take his temperature?
Dollar, when I want to laugh, I tune in Jack Benny. Now, this is serious. The policy we issued to Dr. Schmedlick only covers him up to the extent of what is construed as accidental malpractice. If we can prove criminal malpractice, we can cancel the scoundrel's policy.
Do you have a good reason to think it's criminal, or are you just toying with a happy thought?
Look, our company has already paid off on two claims. Recently, we've heard rumors about this man. It seems the Medical Association is watching him very closely. But so far, no one can prove anything. Now, Dollar, do you want the assignment?
No. Well, I'll take it. Expense account, item two, $194.04. Airfare, Hartford to Los Angeles. Item three, $450. Cab fare, Los Angeles Airport, to the Sun Tower Medical Specialist Building, which I first spotted looming through the smog on Wilshire Boulevard, high in the high-rent district of the City Beautiful. Item four, 55 cents, 11 nickels. Spent telephoning the Schmedlick office at 15-minute intervals until I at last found the doctor not in. In California, the doctors really specialize. And the buildings they work in sometimes really make the most of it, as I found out in the elevator going up.
Second floor, eye, ear, nose, and throat. Doctors Kerr, Kreider, White, Tiss, and Osterban.
Pardon me.
Third floor, fractures, strains, sprains, and dislocations. Doctors Fowler, Woodruff, Toygo, and Brown.
Oh, pardon me.
Fourth floor, obstetrics, orthopedic, pediatrics, and general practice. Dr. Small, Collier, Reynolds, Frank, Stanley, Feinbaum, and Schmedlick.
Would all these medical terms you just tossed off by any chance mean that we have now arrived in the land of the mechanized stork?
To put it crudely, yes.
Thank you, Jack Armstrong.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Dr. Schmedlick in?
Well, no, I'm sorry, he isn't.
Oh, good. I mean, that's too bad.
Just what do you mean?
Well, I meant to say that, since the doctor isn't in, I mean, I'd rather talk to you anyway. You're prettier.
I should be. I'm a girl. Now, is there something I can help you with?
Yes, as a matter of fact, you can. I have a sort of empty feeling around my heart. What would you prescribe?
Bicarbonate of soda. Is that all?
Touché. Now I have an empty feeling around my head.
Please, will you state your business?
Oh, now, honey, you should know that anybody who walks into a doctor's office wants to live. And after seeing you, I really want to live. What are you doing tonight?
I am not in the habit of making dates with strange men.
Who's strange?
And furthermore, you are perhaps the most insufferable, egotistical person.
Now, if you just give it a chance, darling, I'm sure I'll be able to prove you're right.
Why, I wouldn't be caught dead with you. Oh, Johnny, you ain't.
You like that, huh?
This is the first time I've ever tasted champagne.
Good old champagne. The rich people, 7-Up. Well, here's to us.
To us.
Doreen, I feel like talking.
Well, thanks for putting me on guard. Listening to you can do strange things to a girl.
I want you to know more about me. I'm an insurance man. I didn't go up to your office hoping to see the doctor. I wanted to see his nurse, you.
Why, Johnny Dollar, if you try to sell me...
Oh, hey, now, wait a minute. Hear me out. You can probably guess it's getting pretty tough trying to sell insurance these days.
Uh-huh.
More than anything else, a guy needs a new angle. And I've got one. People who go to doctors are worried about their health. Now, people who are worried about their health are worried about the security of their families. So, they become good prospects for insurance policies.
No, but at the same time, are they also bad risk?
A lot of them are, yeah. But they can't pass the insurance physical. But there are plenty of others. You should know the figures prove that as many healthy people go to doctors as do unhealthy. Perhaps the most popular disease in America is hypochondria. And the national headquarters seems to be located right here in Los Angeles.
I see. And from me, you want a list of Dr. Schmedlick's patients?
Smart girl.
Smart boy.
Expense account, item five, $1.40. Cab fare to Doreen's apartment, where I told the driver to wait. Expense account, same item, part two, $28.
waiting time before I took the cab the rest of the way back to my hotel. Expense account, item 6. Breakfast the next morning. 2 hard-earned dollars for 2 soft-boiled eggs. The hen that laid them must do barnyard bits in the movies. At least at those prices, she could have autographed them. At 9:30, I was right on time for my morning appointment with Doreen to pick up the list of Dr. Schmedlick's patients a half hour before the doctor was due to arrive.
Well, Johnny, for a man who stayed up so late, you're very punctual.
Oh, that's me. The early worm who so often gets the bird. You got a copy of the list?
Yeah, got here at 8 to type it for you.
Oh, fine.
Here it is.
Say, this is wonderful. You're a doll. Yeah. A.A. Ahrens. He'd make the top of any alphabetical list. Look, this is a selfish way of saying thanks because I'll enjoy it more than you will, but dinner at Romanoff's tonight?
I'd love it.
Good.
Good morning, Miss Smith.
Good morning, Dr. Schmedley.
Oh, his patients already?
Oh, yes, doctor. This is Mr. Dollar. He's from out of town.
Good morning.
Well, all right. What's the matter with you?
Oh, it's really nothing.
Let me be the judge of that. I will make the diagnosis. I will see you in a moment.
Johnny, I don't know what happened. He's never come in this early before.
I don't mind that, but I wish you hadn't met a patient out there.
Well, I just had to say something. He wants to know about everybody who comes in here. Johnny, you'll just have to go through with it. We can't let him know about the list.
Okay, okay. But what's this going to cost me? What does the old squarehead get for a checkup?
$50 a consultation.
Oh. Honey, instead of Romanoff's for dinner tonight, we'd better make it a drive-in.
Oh, I'm sorry, Johnny, I am.
You can come in now, Mr. Lawler.
Oh, well, with a deed, Doctor. The name is Dollar.
Oh, yes, yes, I forget. I have so many cases on my mind. Now, if you will be so good to slip off your jacket and your shirt while I talk.
All right.
Now, what is the nature of your complaint?
Well, my back. Ah. See, I was in a small automobile crank-up driving out here.
No, that's a dangerous, complicated area, the back. Now, if you'll be so good to get up on the table and lie down.
All right.
Now, on your stomach. The feet down here, please. That's good. Now, I tap your back when I reach the painful area. Please, to tell me.
Yes, doctor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very well muscled, Mr. Dollar. No bruising, strange.
There it is.
Aha. Well, not dangerously near the spine, but very interesting. Here, I think this will help. Oh!
At first, it felt like a big bee sting about a quarter of the way up my back. Then came the buzzing inside my head. Whatever kind of liquid lullaby the good doctor sunk into my spine, it really rocked me to sleep. I had time to move my head and watch Schmedlick put down the hypodermic, walk across the room to my coat, and take from it the list of his patients, plus my wallet containing my identification. But I didn't give it a second thought. I didn't have time to. For me, the lights went out.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Johnny Dollar. But first, assets, one block of wood. Liabilities, more trouble than the legendary paper hanger with the hives. It sounds as though Edgar Bergen had a pretty bad bank balance, doesn't it? But luckily for you, he comes back week after week to the CBS studios with his block of wood named Charlie and lets himself in for more trouble. As for you, you're really in the chips when you take in the Edgar Bergen Charlie McCarthy show heard over most of these stations every Sunday. Don't miss their brightest, gayest show tomorrow night on CBS, where this fall you hear them all.
Tune in this fall for the show that you love best of all. Listen carefully, here's the address. It's CBS.
Now with our star, Charles Russell, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
In my racket, sleeping on the job isn't always fun, and this was one of those times. Waking up from Dr. Schmedlick's slumber treatment for nosy people carried with it a dark brown taste in the mouth, thickness of the tongue, and big bells ringing in your steeple. I was scoring on all those counts when I rolled open my eyelids, which fought me all the way. I sat up and found myself on a hard canvas cot in a bare room with soft walls. They were padded. The window wasn't much. What there was of it was barred. So was a tiny opening in the upholstered door. At first, I thought I was going crazy. Then I realized I was in the kind of place where they put people they think have already joined the ranks of the Enchanted. It took me only 10 years to make it over to the door where I looked out through the small slit.
Hey! Hey, come here, someone! Hey, room service!
All right, wait a minute, wait a minute, I'm coming. Hold up your horses. Now listen, mister, the first thing you learn in here is we don't like noise. Makes the other patients nervous.
Okay, where am I? Who are you?
I'm your nurse.
Oh, sorry I didn't recognize you. I thought nurses were supposed to wear little caps.
I got a little cap, but I don't wear it indoors. Hey, listen, you. Don't go making fun of me, or you'll be sorry, see?
I'm sorry now. How'd I get in here anyway?
Well, all I know is this place is for your own good. They say outside you're dangerous.
I can depend on it. If I ever get out, I will be.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
You're one of them, all right, talking to yourself.
What's your name?
Well, it's none of your business, but I'll tell you. I don't like people calling me Hey You, so I'll tell you. My name is Forgy.
Okay, Forgy. Listen, all I want is a chance to talk to somebody who's in charge. How about it?
That's easy. When your time comes, the boss will be here without no asking. You get one visit from the boss every day, just like all the others.
When'll that be?
Just before supper. So why don't you go back to sleep? That won't be for 4 more hours.
Oh, dandy. Who is this boss? What's his name?
The boss is not a he. It is a she. And her name is Dr. Doreen Smith.
I had 4 hours to think up different ways of calling myself a sucker. At the end of hour number one, I ran out of fingernails. At the end of hour number two, I ran out of patience. And the other two, I spent devising torturous new ways of getting even with a combination that shanghaied me into that fancy four-walled straitjacket. They had left me only one move to make. That was out. I figured that if the winsome Dr. Doreen Smith paid me a visit, she'd come with her body well guarded, probably by the charming, bemuscled behemoth, Nurse Forgy, who, from what I saw of him through that slit in the door, was no Florence Nightingale, believe me. For him, I needed a club. I didn't have much to work with. The iron and canvas cot was heavily bolted to the floor, as was the only other piece of furniture in the room, a small but sturdy table. Took off one of my shoes, ripped the heel off in an angle of the cot, and looked lovingly at the shiny little nail points gleaming back at me from the solid piece of leather in the palm of my hand. I put it to work, ripping a 4-foot square of canvas out of the cot. Then I put both of my shoes into the center of the square, picked up the corners, tied them together close to the weight, gave it a heft, feeling that I now had at least the start of a weapon. I suppose you think that's good news.
He's safe, Dr. Smith. He's still groggy, but that's all.
Don't trust him. Grab his arms when you go in and hold on. Now, go ahead. I'll follow.
Don't try any tricks and we won't hurt you, see?
Thanks, Nursey. I wouldn't...
Swing him a...
Come here, you. Back in here, sweetheart. Oh, dropped your hypodermic. Planning on rocking me to sleep again, huh?
Yeah, go on.
Sure,
go
on. But let me tell you something. This is one squirrel that's going to get out of this cage. Don't rub my fur the wrong way. My head aches. I'm seeing double. My nerve ends are whipping me to death. And for 2 cents, I'd punch you square in the nose. Because one thing for sure, you ain't no lady. Now, sit down. Stay there while I put on what's left of my shoes.
You better go back to Hartford, little boy. This is too big for you.
Being around you would make anybody grow old in a hurry.
What do you think you're going to do?
Right now, I'm going to take your keys, lock you in here with Sleeping Beauty there, and then I'm going out for a breath of fresh air. Have fun, the two of you. You'll make a peach of a pair. I stumbled through the rest of the building, which turned out to be nothing more than a country house. There were no other rooms like the one I had just vacated. For that matter, there were no other so-called patients. It could have been a place maintained for the purpose of making people talk or keeping them from talking. There was no telephone. I couldn't call out, but neither could anybody call in to find out that something was going wrong. This little crime crib was apparently located well out in the country. That meant that Dr. Doreen Smith had arrived in the car, which I commandeered and drove to the nearest filling station. No longer having in my possession that list of Schmedlick's patients, I flipped through my memory and came up with a single name I had noted in his office, A.A. Aaron.
Hello,
is Mr. A.A. Aaron in, please?
It is Aaron speaking.
Oh, good. Mr. Aaron, I'm representing a group of West Coast druggists. I'm making a survey. Where do you have your prescriptions filled?
It is at the Enjoy Pharmacy on Beverly Boulevard.
Oh, I see. One more question, Mr. Aaron. I know that in many cases, people go to the pharmacist recommended by their doctor. Is this the case with you?
Yes, that is right.
Well, thank you, Mr. A.A. Aaron. Pardon me, Mr. Anjoy. The clerk up front told me where I could find you. My name is Dollar. I'd like to have a word with you if you have the time. On the basis of ethics, the state of California should have picked up the gentleman's pharmaceutical license and issued him a barber's permit. Mr. Anjoy loved to talk. From the few thousand words he threw at me during the ensuing half hour, I managed to sift the following information. Dr. Schmedlick's prescriptions were usually refillable, dangerous, and habit-forming. I also managed to memorize the names of a few of his patients in the narcotics book. With these tucked into a lonely corner of my cerebral cortex, I limped out into the newborn night. Expense account item 7, 50 cents, having the missing heel on my shoe replaced by late working cobbler. Checking the owners of the first four names drew me nothing but blanks. The fifth drew me closer.
Come on in.
Her name was Millicent Royal. She was the kind of girl whose family takes up a full page in the Blue Book, and whose personal habits take up full pages on police blotters.
Well, don't just stand there. Come in.
Thank you.
Sit down.
Miss Royal, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm an insurance investigator.
I don't want any.
You don't understand. I said investigator, not salesman. I want to get a line on a doctor. Otto Schmedlick. You recognize the name?
I might, but I'm not sure it's any of your business.
Look, little lady, let's quit sparring. I've tailed friend Schmedlick this far, and now I want some information. What have you got?
Nothing. He's a fine doctor, a wonderful doctor.
I don't think he's doing you any good at all.
You don't know anything about me.
I'm afraid I do, more than you think. I know enough about Dr. Schmedlick to know that he's doing a lot of people a lot of trouble. I want to put him out of business, and you can help me. Oh, look, honey, Schmedlick isn't the one that needs protection. You do. You and the other people on the same spot you're on. Why don't you do yourself some good?
I think you better leave now.
Okay. Perhaps I'd better drop around to the home of Quincy P. Royal, Bel Air.
But, Father, no, don't do that.
And give me some answers.
You can't make me. Nobody can. Anything that passes between a doctor and his patient is a secret. Nobody can make me say it, not even a judge.
Whoa. Wait a minute. All right. If you change your mind, I'm staying at the Park Beverly Hotel. I'll trip him up sooner or later. If I have to, I'm turning it over to the federal men. Narcotics department.
Why did I ever let you in here? Get out. Leave me alone. Go away. Please. You can't make me do anything.
Well. Is my estranged wife having a lover's quarrel?
Bill, get this man out of here. Make him leave me alone.
I don't see why I should rescue you from anybody's clutches. But you, I don't like your look, so get out before I bust you in half.
You know, you look like just the guy who might be able to do it. Happy honeymoon. My hangover from Dr. Schmedlick's health cure hit me again as I hit the street. What I needed was a hot shower and a cold drink. After the water hit me in the face, and a trifle of the same hit the scotch in my glass, I sat down in the big easy chair in my room, posing for a picture. Johnny Dollar, lonesomest man in town. I was mixed up in something mighty big and mighty wrong, but something I couldn't as yet put a finger on. Up until then, I had to go on with ability, experience, and instinct, all unacceptable to the police as evidence. I asked myself why I hadn't called the law and told them about my party with the lady doctor and the man nurse. Then I answered myself that if I did, I'd probably be the one charged with assault, battery, and whatever else they wanted to trump up. Again, it would only be my word against that of an established medical man and his doctor-type nurse. So I decided to leave Doreen and her monster-type nurse where they were until I could turn them over to the cops. Four drinks later, I was beginning to realize that those kind of troubles don't drown easily. And then the phone rang. Yeah?
Mr. Dollar?
Yes, this is Dollar.
This is Millicent Royal. I want you to come over right away. Right away.
Wait a minute. What's the matter?
I changed my mind. I'll tell you everything. Anything you want to know.
Now, listen, Millicent. Take the advice of an old hand at this sort of thing. If you want to help, tell me now. Over the phone.
No. Can't trust telephones. Somebody's always listening.
Oh, listen to me. It never fails, Miss Royal. You're playing around with the kind of suspense they like to put into movie scripts. The dame calls with some hot information she's afraid to spill over the phone. Then when the investigator gets there, she's dead.
Hurry. Goodbye.
I went there. I was right. She was dead. That gave me two people to go looking for. I didn't know where her estranged husband Bill lived, so I went to work on the doctor. His all-night telephone exchange gave me the information that he had called in just before leaving the hospital on his way to the office and could be reached there in 20 minutes. I was apparently closer than he was, so I walked over to the building and up to the fourth floor. There were lights on in the Schmedlick office, so I walked in.
What do you want?
I came here to see the doctor, Bill, but I was going to get around to you eventually. I just came from your wife's apartment.
So did I.
That's what I mean. You've got some talking to do.
I know who you are, but don't go getting any ideas. I didn't kill her. I loved her.
It didn't sound like love when I met you in the apartment.
We made up right after you left. I went out to get her something from the drugstore. When I came back, she was dead. That's what I'm doing here. I'm waiting here to kill the man who did it.
How do you know it was Schmedlick?
Because after you left her apartment, she called the doctor and told him if he didn't stop shaking her down, she was going to tell you the whole story.
And he threatened her and she called me. What was the grounds for blackmail? Narcotics?
That's right. He got her started on it during the long illness she had. After she was well but still needed the drug, he told her he'd see that her family heard about it if she didn't pay him off.
Nice guy.
He wrecked us, wrecked our marriage, made a victim of her. And she wasn't the only one. There were others. He made drug addicts out of them and then threatened to blackmail them if they didn't pay off.
Can you prove all this?
I can't prove it. Nobody can. The cops, the medical association, they've tried. But Schmedlick is clever. Too clever. Oh, when I blast that monster out of the world, I'll be curing it of a big sickness.
Now, hey, take it easy. Look, I know how you feel, but you haven't got the right answer. Why don't you let me take over?
Stay out of it, Dollar. I never belonged to any Boy Scout troops. I'm not joining now. You know what they say, an apple a day. Well, I've got one here for the doctor. You see this? It's left over from Guadalcanal.
I sure do see it, a pineapple. Army type, hand grenade.
Well, I'm gonna feed it to him.
Oh, Bill, now look, I know you're upset, but don't forget, those things were designed to take care of more than one man. Have you thought of that?
I've thought about it a lot, and it still all adds up. I haven't got a thing left to live for. That's him.
Bill, you're off your rocker. Don't do it. Give me that thing.
Shut up. Stand away.
What is this? What are you two doing here?
Come and get it, Schmedlick.
A bomb.
Before the grenade could explode, I did. With one foot, I kicked Bill mightily in the shin bone. With a pin pulled, I only had about 5 seconds. I took two steps, and with the other foot, I kicked the grenade out with the corridor, then I hit the floor.
All right. I'll still take you to pieces, Schmedlick.
I let Bill go to work on the doctor until he had socked him into a state of unconsciousness. Then to save Bill from a murder rap, I did the same for him with a loose portable typewriter. Sorry, but it's time to typewrite the tagline, William. P.S. Then I called the police. Expense accounts, item 8. $50, airplane rental, Burnsley Charter Service for a flight to Palm Springs. Item 9, $62, dinner at the Dunes, party of three. Included in said party, me and Haig and Haig. Expense account, item 9, airfare Palm Springs to Los Angeles to Hartford, $244.04. Expense account, total, $1,211.69. All that for getting rid of a doctor. And if you react the same way you reacted to my last expense account, it'll probably mean that you will be needing a doctor. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes and stars Charles Russell. Script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Willard Waterman, Betty Lou Gerson, Larry Dobkin, Paul Dubov, Georgia Ellis, and Edmund McDonald. The special music is written and conducted by Wilbur Hatch.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 15th, 1949 on CBS. And so ends an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonia. It's been a pleasure.